You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live today from our Chicago affiliate, WCPT, where last night in Darien, out of the Frugal Muse bookstore, we had a wonderful book signing. It was the bookstore was so full that there were, I don't know, 30, 50 people or so who had spilled out into the it was freezing cold, by the way. Who stood outside, they propped the door open so that they could hear. I had to stand on a table. I mean, it was just, it was incredible. There were hundreds and hundreds of people there. We had a great time. And just a reminder, tomorrow morning, first thing, I'm going to get up and head out to the airport. I'll be flying up to Minneapolis, where tomorrow afternoon we will be doing a gig at the Operating Engineers Hall, sponsored by KTNF, Minnesota's Progressive Talk. And it includes the price of admission. This is you have to have tickets for this one. The price of admission includes a book, plus there will be food and an open bar. And if you have one of the first 40 tickets that were printed, they had the wrong address on them. So be sure to get over to am950radio.com and check it out. The actual address tomorrow is going to be at Operating Engineers Hall at 2829 Anthony Lane in Minneapolis. And I'll be giving you more details as we go through the program today. But just a reminder. So, that said, it is Friday, and Senator Bernie Sanders is on the line with us. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall with the guy that I think of as America's senator, although as a Vermonter, or a one-time Vermonter, a one-decade Vermonter, I know that the people of Vermont are very proud that he's their senator. Hey, Bernie, how are you? Senator? Senator Sanders? Shane, is Bernie with us? Senator Sanders? Huh. I wonder...
No, I'm not hearing anything.
Bernie? No, he's not hearing your audio, Shane. Are you sure that you're sending it out? Because we can hear Bernie. I just put him on. Okay. We're gonna dial him right back and make it work. In the meantime, let me just make sure that my phone lines are working here. David in Sheboygan, Michigan. David, can you hear me? David in Sheboygan, Michigan? Okay, David can't hear me. Let's see if Paul in South Lyon, Michigan can hear me. Paul, can you hear me? These are folks who are on hold. No one can hear me. Okay, so we're going to reboot the entire system, and we will come back in just a minute. So I'm going to close out of my call screen software here while I do that. This is just, you know, the wonders of technology and remote technology at that. And in the meantime, while I'm waiting for this whole thing to reboot, let me just, you know, give you some updates. Mary Landrieu and the Senate plan to reboot, or whatever you want to call it, to reset, to expand, to allow insurance companies continue to rip off people, basically. It's probably going to die in the Senate. The Fred Upton's plan in the House, we'll see. It'll probably get passed because it's a Republican plan, but, you know, it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. So we'll see how all this stuff shakes out. Shane, tell me when I should open the call screen software on my end, because I've got it closed. Okay, we're resetting right now. And in the meantime, the Center for American Progress is reporting that the fellow who shot that girl who was knocking on his door, a white guy, a young African-American woman, has a car accident, knocks on this guy's door and says, help me, and he shoots her dead. He's being charged with murder. Very interesting. We now have four plans to fix Obamacare. And Speaker John Boehner, in addition to saying, no, we're not going to we don't think that there is a problem with discrimination in the United States against gay people. He has now invited an anti-gay group in. So go figure. Okay, so we can open the SCOFF software here. We can try it again. Okay, and you're dialing Bernie right now. And my apologies for this. at the book signing last night, I was going through the crash of 2016, my new book, and you know, the basic premise that we're really still in the crash of 2007, 2008, and that we've been, I see Senator Sanders. He's not on the phone yet, but I see him on the call board. So, anyhow, I was going through the premise that we're still in that crash, and because the fundamentals haven't been changed. Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama tried to change the fundamentals in the first months, but they were unsuccessful. So, but I can't put him on. It won't come up for me. It's still.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey, Bernie.
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
I'm sorry. It's technology nightmare here. I'm in Chicago. You're in Vermont, I'm assuming.
Right.
Okay. So give us an update on what's going on this week.
Okay. I want to tell you something that's really interesting that just happened the other day. We sent out an email to a whole lot of folks on our email list. And people can get on that list at sanders.senate.gov. And you know what we did, Tom? We said, we talked about wealth and income inequality in America as the great moral issue of our time. And very few people phrase it like that, but I happen to think it is. You know, you have enormous disparity in terms of the people on top doing phenomenally well while the middle class disappears and more people living in poverty now than ever before. And I phrased it as a moral issue. And do you know what? Within 2 days, we have had over 4,000 people writing. And we said to people, tell me what you think. What are your ideas? How do we address the issue? Should we address the issue? And in 2 days, you know, which for us is really extraordinary, we had over 4,000 people writing in on that issue. Imagine that.
Wow, that's great.
And what it tells me is that we're not just looking at economics and the fact that most of the new jobs being created are low wage and part-time, or that real unemployment is 14%, or that 95% of all new income in a recent 3-year period went to the top 1%. But people are seeing not just as an economic issue, but a moral issue. Do you really want to live in a nation, or do you feel comfortable about living in a nation in where the top 1% owns 38% of the financial wealth of America, while the bottom 60% owns 2.3%.
Right.
And do you really feel comfortable about living in a nation where, in recent years, there has been just a huge growth in the number of billionaires, while we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world? Back in 1996, there were 121 billionaires in this country. Today there are 442, and yet we have more people living in poverty than ever before, highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world. Poverty among seniors is growing. Hunger is growing in America. Is that the kind of country that we want to live in from a moral perspective? And I think just a whole lot of people are very concerned about that issue. And people, by the way, they want to make comments on that, they can get that information and write to us at sanders.senate.gov. But I was just really surprised at the kind of response we got to that.
Yeah, yeah. America is a fundamentally moral people, you know, Americans.
They are. And what you have, though, is you have our political world, the political establishment, and the media establishment never phrasing the issue in that way.
Yeah, yeah. And morality, unless it's, you know, right-wing evangelicals or whatever who are trying to redefine morality.
Right.
You're absolutely right. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. We'll be taking your calls for Senator Sanders, unless he has more that he wants to share with us right after the break. Stick around. We'll be right back with Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Live from Chicago on my way up to Minneapolis, where I will be tomorrow. We'll be doing a book signing tomorrow afternoon. Welcome back. You still with us, Senator? Senator?
Yeah, right here.
Okay, great.
Good.
Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Paul, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for watching Free Speech
Bernie,
TV, Paul.
You're not the only one, but you're one of the gems among a lot of lumps of coal in the Congress. And I hope you use that in your next campaign. Anyway, the Republicans and their partners, the corporate billionaire media, seems like are trying to take this country back to the insurance company death panels that bankrupted and killed thousands of people a year. Recently, President Obama fell into their trap and apologized for the insurance companies canceling policies when he should have told the so-called reporters to start doing their job and go ask the insurance companies why they're canceling policies. But my question is, would you please explain how insurance plans, even the crappy ones, were grandfathered into Obamacare?
Well, you know, the very, very complicated Affordable Care Act, and one of its problems is, Paul, that it is just extraordinarily complicated. The way it ended up coming about is we needed 60 votes in the Senate to overcome a Republican filibuster. So there are a whole lot of things in there that are not particularly good, but were put in there to get 60 votes and to try to get something passed in the Senate without one Republican vote, which is what ended up happening. But going back to the broader issue of what you began your discussion about these totally inadequate health insurance plans, the dilemma that Obama had, and he really was caught in a very difficult position. On one hand, he said publicly, you know, if you like the insurance plan that you have, you can keep it. On the other hand, you have these insurance policies out there that are just horrendous. I mean, I was looking at some of them the other day, where maximum you pay a certain amount of money, maybe you pay $800, $1,000 a year for what you get. And you know what you get, Tom? You get maximum $2,000 coverage.
Whoa.
Which will last you about 15 minutes if you're ever forced to be in a hospital.
Right.
And the problem is that many people, I think, did not fully understand what they were getting. They said, oh, boy, I have health insurance. Well, you really don't. It covers very, very little, and I think people did not know that. And, you know, when our Republican friends are saying, oh, isn't it terrible that people can't keep their policy? Well, these policies, the reason they couldn't keep them is they were totally inadequate. And what the Affordable Care Act wanted to say is that policies have got to have at least a minimum standard. But I think once this thing begins to roll out and people understand that if they look at the Affordable Care Act, there may well be programs that cost them the same amount of money, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but will provide a lot more for them than is currently the case. And that's the key issue here.
Yeah. Well, we're going to hit the break in just a second, so I suppose we can get into this on the other end. But I'm really curious your thoughts on these plans in the House and the Senate and where they're going. So we'll be right back with more of Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm in Chicago. I'll be in Minneapolis tomorrow. Well, I'll fill you in on that a little later. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Chicago, and Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls.
Again, stay with Paul's question,
sure.
And that is to say, look, in terms of this Affordable Care Act, there is no defense at how badly the website has malfunctioned. There's just no defense. I don't think the president tries to make a defense for it. It is an absolute embarrassment, and it is causing very, very serious problems, period. End of discussion. I just met the other day, along with other senators, with the folks who are working, presumably they tell us, 24/7 on this issue. They continue to tell us that by the end of the month, they should have this thing in good shape. I certainly hope that is the case. But what the Republicans, of course, where they have absolutely no credibility, I mean, these are people who have consistently wanted to defund the Affordable Care Act. They have no solution to the need to provide, to deal with the fact that we have 48 million people with no health insurance, many others with junk insurance like the ones I just discussed, and the fact that we end up spending almost twice as much per person on health care as do the people of any other nation without particularly good health care outcomes. So, you know, Republicans have no credibility on this issue. But certainly the administration has not helped the case by the website malfunctioning. And that's something that just has to be addressed.
Kevin, in Wilmington, Vermont, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. With your senator.
This is Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Bernie. My question is twofold. First of all, I'm wondering if you could give us an update to Senate Bill 795, which apparently is aimed at giving master limited partnerships financing for green energy projects. And also, have you had a chance to see the letter I wrote regarding a green energy project along the median strip of Interstate 91, which is related to that?
Tell me a little bit about that project. I did think I did. Just very briefly, Kevin, that on the interstate, what were you proposing?
I was proposing for the entire length where it's allowable, where it's able to be done, to make a solar
yep.
array and windmill energy power
yep.
plant,
yep.
the clear length.
Yep. I am familiar with that. I think that the second point is a good point. Look, we just, here in Vermont, working with the Department of Energy, just installed in Williston, Vermont, a project which is going to be testing different solar panels to see which ones are more efficient for our climate. And that type of testing is taking place in other parts of the country. Vermont's climate is different than Florida's, is different than the Midwest, etc. So we're looking at that. And the idea in terms of solar, look, to install solar, PV, we are going to need space to do it. And I think what Kevin is talking about, why not use strips of the interstate? To the degree that that is feasible, I think that makes sense to me. I think we should be using public land. The truth of the matter is if we utilize public land, we can create a lot more sustainable energy, and that's something we have got to do. Because the scientists keep telling us with more and more urgency that global warming is real. It is already causing serious damage, and it will only get worse unless we transform our energy system. So, Kevin, thanks for your thoughts.
Wes, let me click the button here. Uh-oh, now my buttons aren't working.
All right, well, Wes is... Can you get Wes on?
Yeah, I can't, but I can tell you his question is, are higher insurance rates caused by a desire for profit? I'm guessing he's more articulate than that, but that was his question. We will have to reboot all of our systems at the bottom of the hour, but I can tell you what people are calling about. Wes is calling from Chicago, but that's his question. Thoughts on why the higher insurance rates are going up? And actually, I'm curious your thoughts on the Landry plan in the Senate, the what's his name plan in the House, and what the president has done.
And what it's very important, and I think a lot of Americans don't fully appreciate, is that our non-healthcare system, if you like, which is primarily dominated by private insurance companies, is unique in the industrialized world. We are the only country in the world where private insurance companies, whose goal in life is to make as much money as possible, is the predominant force. Every other major country has a national health care system guaranteeing health care to all people. And all of those systems are different. The Canadian system is different than the British system, is different than the German system, is different than the Scandinavian systems. They're all different. But they all have the common basis, the commonality of guaranteeing health care to all people in a non-profit way, providing health care in the most cost-effective way. So when Wes asked why our rates are so much higher than the rest of the world, and again, we are spending almost twice as much as any other country. So when people say, is the American system better than the Canadian system? Well, we can argue it. Canadian system has its problems. We certainly have our problems. They are spending half as much or a little bit more than half as much as we are. It's like, you know, me paying Tom $60,000 for a car, you paying $30,000 and us arguing which car is better.
My car should be a lot better.
That's certainly not the case.
Yeah.
You could argue that some of the Danish system or the Scandinavian systems, in fact, are better than the American system, spending a fraction of what we're spending. So the answer to Wes's question is that when you have a system designed for profit, it not only takes a whole lot of money out of the system for profit, it distorts the system. For example, if we invest in primary health care, if we make sure that every American has access to a doctor when he or she needs that access, not only do you ease human suffering and prevent death, you save money. Because right now, people end up getting a lot sicker than they should. But we don't emphasize primary health care because it's not as profitable as other types of health care.
Brilliant point. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We will fix this technical problem during this break at the bottom of the hour. And we will be back with more of your questions for Bernie right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
At sanders.senate.gov. And for tickets to my gig tomorrow in Minneapolis, go to am950radio.com. Bernie just vanished from my board. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Bernie just went gray as if somebody had picked up the line, and then he just vanished. My board is empty. Shane, can you tell me what's going on? Okay. Well, just a quick reminder, if we will be tomorrow from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Operating Engineers Hall. That's at 2829 Anthony Lane in South Minneapolis, Minnesota. And Common Good Books is going to have books there. This is a ticketed event, so you have to sign up at am950radio.com. Tickets include admission and complimentary food and drink and a book. And Senator Sanders, you're back with us.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm very sorry for all this confusion. Bernie, we had to completely reset our phone system at the bottom of the hour, and so we dumped all our callers. So people are just starting to call right back in right now. But
well, let me just mention, while people are calling back, I wanted to mention a couple of the things that are moving in Washington right now that are very important. We are going to move as quickly as we can an effort to raise the minimum wage to at least $10.10 an hour. And the reason for that is obvious, I think, to most of the listeners, that minimum wage has not kept pace with inflation. Most of the new jobs in America that are being created are low-wage jobs, part-time jobs. The national minimum wage of $7.25 an hour is totally inadequate for a family. It's totally inadequate for an individual. So we're going to try to raise that minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. I think we've got a shot to do it if the American people pile on this issue, if they make it really clear that it is absurd that we have millions of people working for starvation wages. So we're going to need the help of the American people on that, and that's a bill that's going to be coming up. I'm not quite sure when, but certainly within the next month, I think. Another issue out there, Tom, that you and I have talked about a whole lot is the issue of Social Security. I'm on the Budget Committee, and we're in conference right now. And clearly, our Republican friends would like to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which is their way they want as to how they want to do deficit reduction. And I am unalterably opposed to that. I think when so many people are hurting, you don't cut these programs, especially since Social Security hasn't contributed a nickel to the deficit in the first place. I'm happy to say that working with a number of progressive organizations, last week these organizations dropped off a petition with 700,000 names to Senator Murray and to Congressman Ryan saying don't cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and I very much appreciate their effort to make that happen.
Yeah, that was it was a great coalition. I know Progressive Democrats of America was part of that. Okay, we got a whole bunch of callers now for you.
Okay.
So let's go for it. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're on the air.
Yeah,
Senator Sanders.
I just wanted to say to Senator Sanders that I think the Democratic Party needs to have the leadership and stick their necks out as far as the Trans-Pacific Partnership and say, hey, we support labor. And it's not just labor, like labor, quote, a special interest group. We're all laboring, even people who are non-contract like myself, technical people. It's literally millions of people. And I want to say to them, stick your neck out and say no. You know, Obama should say, no, we're not going to do this. I just find that there's no spine in the Democratic Party. I support the Progressive Caucus. I've supported Keith Ellison. I worked on his campaign. But I'm not going to get involved in the DFL here in this state, because one of the reasons is that, and then also
John, can we get John, I'm sorry,
by the way, I want to say that Keith Ellison, in my view, is doing a great job. I helped found the Progressive Caucus way back when I got elected to the House in 91, and Keith is probably, and Raul Grijalva are doing a terrific job making an important caucus in the Congress. You know, what can I say to John? I think he's right. As Tom and I have discussed for a number of years now, the trade policies that this country has established, from NAFTA to CAFTA to permanent normal trade relations with China, etc., have worked very, very well for the multinational corporations. They have been a disaster for working families who have seen jobs go to China and other low-wage countries. I fear very much that TPP is part of that trend. This is a bill being written by corporate America. What can I tell you? I agree with John on that. But you have seen, for a number of years, whether it was Bill Clinton, whether it was Barack Obama, support for trade policies which, do not work well for working people.
Michael in Westerville, Ohio. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Tom and Senator Sanders. It's a pleasure. By the way, I've got your book, and I'm starting to go through it, Tom. It's exciting.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about unemployment, and not just from the situation we're in now, but it seems to me that this is something that's been coming on for many, many years. And my question, when I'll just make the statement short and then ask the question, is why nothing has been done in government and think tanks to address this. The unemployment today, as I see it, is basically a result of years of automation, so that's eliminated jobs, and increased productivity, so things look good. Offshoring, of course, a shift from making things to financial transactions, frozen minimum wage, as you were just talking, TPP coming along, and the growth in service and low pay. All of these are to the benefit of the wealthy and corporations. They're not the fault of the workers who have lost the jobs. And it seems to me that this could have been or should have been predictable for the last 30 years as this trend was proceeding. And I'm wondering why we have not, as a government and as think tanks around
Michael,
the country,
Your points are excellent. I think you hit the nail on the head, and I agree with everything you just said. Your analysis is exactly right. The answer is that this is what's going on in Washington right now. You have some of us, and again, I'm a member of this Budget Conference Committee, and what I have said over and over and over again, publicly and privately, that the most important issue we have to deal with is jobs. Is the deficit a serious issue? Yeah, it is. The good news is we've cut the deficit in half in the last 4 years, and we have to keep going. But the far more important issue is that real unemployment in this country is close to 14%. Youth unemployment is around 20%. African-American youth unemployment is somewhere around 40%. What we desperately need to do is to create jobs and deal with the issues that Michael just raised. There's some talk about a, you know, somewhat rebirth of manufacturing in America, and that's great. But two factors have got to be understood. Number one, they are producing more with far fewer workers because of robotics and automation. And second of all, sadly and tragically, the wages paid to many of the workers who are entering manufacturing now are significantly less than what they used to be. These are issues that have to be dealt with if we're going to save the middle class of this country. I think Michael's analysis is right. All I can tell you, for some of us, jobs are at the top of the list. And when you hear about this budget negotiations going on, one of the fights that we are making is that we have got to invest substantially in rebuilding our infrastructure
transforming our energy system, and when you do that, we can create millions of jobs.
Todd in Aurora, Colorado, watching on Roku. Hey, Todd.
On Roku, yes. Bernie, I was wondering when you might be running for president, and or if you're not, when we can expect to see a real progressive running for president.
Well, Todd, thank you very much. And, you know, that question is kind of asked of me quite a
about
bit.
About once a week.
Well, more than that, I would say. But
yeah, on this point,
and this is what I have said, Todd. I think the issues that we talk about on this show, the issues of the collapsing middle class, the growth in income and wealth inequality, the fact that we're the only nation on earth, a major country on earth without a national health care system, the fact that we just talked about a moment ago that unemployment is so high and creating jobs should be the major priority of our government, the fact that we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world, the fact that Wall Street has so much wealth and so much power, the fact that we are living under the Citizens United disastrous decision, which allows the Koch brothers and others to pour huge amounts of money into politics. All of those issues need to be debated, and they need to be discussed, and they need to be dealt with. And you know what? On virtually all of these issues, the American people agree with us. They want to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and so forth and so on. They want to create jobs. They want the wealthy to stop paying their fair share. So what I have said, Todd, in response to this question about running for president is somebody has got to get out there and start raising those issues, start organizing people, and start educating. I think there are a number of people who have the capability of doing that. It is 3 years since until the presidential election, and I think somebody will come forward. But, you know, will I give some consideration to doing that? If other people don't come forward, the answer is I will, because somebody has got to raise these issues. We can't go through a presidential election where the needs of the working families of this country are not being discussed. So we've got a long way to go on that, but that's my response.
I would love to see you run for president, Bernie. I just, wow. We just have 10 seconds. Okay. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. And you can sign up for the Bernie Buzz over there. And we will be back with more of your questions for Senator Sanders in just a moment. Also, I'll be in Minneapolis tomorrow, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Operating Engineers Hall. For tickets to that, go to am950radio.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. Sign up for the Bernie Buzz. Find out what's going on in the world. Welcome back. Edmund in Hot Springs National Park. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Senator. My name is Edmund. I'm calling from Hot Springs, Arkansas. And I know that selling body parts and using your body parts for profit is illegal in this country, also considered immoral. I'm wondering how is that profiting from health of people is allowable and it's not considered immoral? And how can we consider ourselves civilized nation when we have health care for profit?
Well, Edmund, that's a very good question. I think it's a legitimate question. As I have said many times, I think it is an embarrassment and a disgrace that the United States has not joined the rest of the world in making it clear that health care should be a right, R-I-G-H-T, of all people. And the fact is, according to a study of a few years ago from Harvard University, that about 45,000 people a year die because they don't have health insurance, they hesitate going to the doctor, and by the time they do go, if they do go, it's too late. This is a rampant problem. So I agree with you. It is an issue of morality. And by the way, it's also an issue of economics, because we end up spending so much more than other countries for healthcare because of the dysfunctional system that we have. So the goal is healthcare for all, do it in a cost-effective way. I happen to believe the most cost-effective way is a Medicare for All single-payer system.
Ed, in Klamath Falls, Oregon. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good day, Senator. I was wondering why you don't put an end to the fast-track process for bills that don't allow discussion or amendment. That is what we send you to Congress to do.
Well, Ed, actually, I vote against fast-track when it comes. There is a concern about fast-track for TPP, which is maybe what you are referring to, and I am strongly opposed to that. So, you know, and I want to pick up on Ed's point because I hear it too often, and that is you guys in Congress, that's what we send you to do. Well, there are 435 members of the House. There are 100 members of the Senate. It's not you guys. It is different people with different views. There are some people who strongly support TPP who want as little debate as possible. There are big money interests who are pushing this thing forward, and there's some of us who strongly oppose it. So to simply say you guys or everybody is factually wrong, and that's one of the problems in America. You have sometimes people say, well, I dislike everybody. Well, that's kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense because there are people with different points of view. What point of view do you have? Who do you dislike? Who's for you? Who is against you? Those are kind of issues we have to work with.
Yeah, I have the fellow who drove me down to the radio station today was going off about how he didn't vote in the last election because he was so disgusted.
Right.
And I'm like, why don't you show up for the political parties?
Well, the point is, and a lot of people, you know, there are people, throw everybody out, they're all terrible. Well, there are people who have fundamentally different points of view. That's a cop-out. What's your point of view? Support the people who you think make sense, oppose the people who don't. But say that everybody is awful is a totally irrational statement.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this, 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. It's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. Sanders.Senate.gov, his website. And Kevin in Brownfield, Texas. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. This is Kevin. And I just wanted to agree with what Tom said earlier about Bernie being president. I would love that, and I'd love to have a lot of people in Congress and the Senate just like him. But anyway, my question is, we know that corporations try to maximize profit. But when you consider that versus what they're doing to America, shipping all our manufacturing jobs overseas to China and India and Mexico, I mean, what is their goal with America? If
good
they
question.
Reduce us to poverty, what
here's
are
what
they going to make?
That's an excellent question. And I think this is what the answer is, and it's important that people understand that. They don't give a damn. They don't consider themselves, if you're a large multinational corporation, you don't particularly care about America. Your goal is to make profit. And if you can shut down a plant in America and make 5 cents more profit by moving it to China, that's a good deal for you. There is no allegiance. Many of these major American corporations were made wealthy by their own workers in this country and by the consumers of this country. But in recent years, they have turned their backs on America, and that's just the way it is. I remember the fellow who was head of General Electric, what was his name? Welch, Jack Welch. Tom, you remember Welch's famous statement?
You're talking about the barge?
Right. He said if I had my druthers, this is a guy who was head of General Electric, one of the large American corporations, said, if I had my druthers, I would put our manufacturing on a barge so I'd be able to move it to any part of the world where wages were low. And, in fact, the fellow who followed him, Jeff Inbelt, some years ago said, well, when I look at the future of GE, I look at China, China, China. So these guys, they don't have allegiance to America. And I will tell you that some months ago, guys from the Business Roundtable, which is the organization representing all of corporate America, they came forward to Washington, and they were saying, you know, you got to cut Social Security or raise the retirement age for Medicare. etc. So these guys are really waging a class warfare against the American worker, and we've got to stand up to them and develop a strategy which defeats them.
Eric in Medford, Oregon. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Eric?
Oh, hey. Thank you. Senator, I'm one of the vets that was kicked off of TRICARE Prime last month, and I'm a cancer patient, so it's caused my prices to go up significantly now that I'm not paying a copay. I'm just paying the percentage. I looked into a supplemental plan. Well, ACA doesn't affect vets, so I still have a pre-existing condition, so I can't get a supplemental insurance plan.
Are you going to the VA facility?
We don't have one.
You don't have anyone near you at all?
Yeah, there's nothing for that, so I'm using regular care like that.
All right. Eric, I would check out the VA. Don't dismiss it quite so quickly. I don't know where the nearest facility is to you. Is it anywhere near you at all?
Well, Medford's about, what, an hour and a half from Portland, Eric?
Oh, it's about a five-hour drive.
All right, well, that's the one. See if you have what's called a community-based outreach clinic. Anyhow, go to the website for a start. We are looking at TRICARE, and you're not the only person who's having that problem. But second of all, I would urge you to get to the website, see if there is a local. We have a lot of primary health care clinics called community-based outreach clinics, and there may be one in a reasonable proximity to you. I would urge you to check it out. But we are looking at this TRICARE problem as well.
Okay. Arlie, in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, listening on AM 1350.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Good.
My question is this. Because of the Affordable Care Act, my premiums have just raised, just to meet the minimum, has raised up $1,400 a year. That $1,400 a year, wait, let me time out. I'm a five-person family. Single, I make the income. My wife is home with the kids to take care of them. This is my problem. That $1,400 a year that now I have to pay for medical insurance for this Obamacare takes away from my kids to be athletically involved in sports.
Let me ask you this question, Ollie. Are you on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Did you have health insurance before the Affordable Care Act?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Now, since then, now it's raised up. I think.
Let me ask you. Let me ask you this.
$1,400 more.
Okay. Now let me ask you a question. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know your income, and you don't have to announce your income over the radio. Have you checked to see if you are eligible for a federal subsidy?
Yes, I have, and I'm not.
Your income is above.
Yes. So I want to know that seriously, it's hard with five.
$1,400 is $1,400. You don't have to explain it to me. I understand that. That's real. What I would say, all I would say is, and I hope you have looked at it thoroughly, is that for many people, depending on their income, I don't know what your income is. Is it $50,000 or $70,000, whatever it is? If you have, how many kids do you have?
Five. He just dropped.
That's a large family. I mean, five kids and a husband and a wife. That income eligibility goes up pretty, pretty high, and somebody in that position, obviously depending on their income, could well be eligible for a subsidy which would do away with this additional payment.
Yeah. Okay, Bernie, we got a little less than a minute to wrap up the hour.
Okay, last point that I want to make that we didn't get into. Tom, there's some good news out there. Very often, I think we have a lot of folks who work or are interested in the U.S. postal system who listened to the show. There was just a report that came out looking at the financial situation of the Postal Service over the last year. And here's the good news. Without this onerous, this terrible burden of $5.5 billion a year that goes into retiree health benefits, the Postal Service this year actually made $600 million on their business.
Wow.
In profit.
That is great. And Bernie, I am so pleased to hear that you would consider running for president. I hope we can talk more about that in the future.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Senator. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in the studio with us today for the first 15 minutes of our... Elliot Richardson, he's been on the program before. Elliot is the head of the Small Business Advocacy Council here in Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah. What's your official title?
I'm the CEO.
Okay. CEO.
CEO, not Big Cheese. CEO.
Okay. Close enough. And the website is sbacil.org, as in Small Business Advocacy Council Illinois, right? ORG.
You got it.
Okay. There's a couple of issues that small businesses in Illinois and I think all across the country are dealing with. And you know, we've talked before. You what you're doing here in Illinois, people all around the country should be doing. Small businesses and small, you know, getting together. The edge tax credits. What the heck is an edge tax?
Well, you know, we've got a very unfortunate phenomenon going on right now throughout the country where folks in different states are trying to lure businesses from one state to the other by offering some very, very large tax incentives. So, you know, small business owners don't ask for anything. We're not asking for a handout. All we want is a level playing field. And what you see in Illinois, at least, is in 2011, $161 million was given out in tax credits, primarily to large businesses who threatened to leave the state.
I've run a bunch of small businesses in my life, and I've never had a government come to me and say, I'll give you money to stay here.
That makes two of us, Tom. Yeah. And, you know, whether or not it's good economic policy, I guess that could be debated. The problem is, there's no transparency. There's never been any studies that show whether or not the juice is worth the squeeze for giving very
well. It's competition. You know, at a national level, it's obviously not, because you're just moving from one state to another. And in fact, if you're moving to a lower wage state, you're causing less economic activity in the country, because wages are what create demand, which is what drives an economy. Senator Sanders on this program a year or so ago suggested that what we should do is any state. That within that state, any state, county, or municipal government that offers these kind of tax breaks to corporations to move into that state, or you know, or that anything like that, should lose their federal highway funds.
I think something should be done. I mean, ultimately, we need a level playing field. And what you're saying is basically you're 100% right. States come together, they form a circular firing squad, and the only people that really benefit are large corporations who demand these tax credits. Meanwhile, you know, in Illinois, our income taxes went up 66%. So while that's going on and you see $160 million in edge tax credits being given out to large companies.
In one year,
you have to ask, is that good economic policy? And what's even more stunning now is there are corporations in Illinois who aren't paying taxes, so they can't take advantage of the edge tax credit. Mm-hmm. So they're actually going to the Illinois legislature and they're saying, listen, we want a tax break. We don't pay taxes. So here's what we want. We want our employees to pay their state income taxes. But instead of passing that on to the state, we're going to keep that. We're going to keep those taxes.
So,
it's pay taxes to your boss, essentially.
So this is a pretty slick trick if you could pull it off. So you know, I'm a small businessman. We have about a dozen employees all together in aggregate, and all of them have. Well, we have a payroll service that does the payroll, and they deduct state taxes for all these folks. And you're saying that if I was GE or Boeing or Sears or whatever, I don't know the names of the companies, but if I was some big company I could just go to the state and say, I don't want to give that money to you. I want to keep that money that's been deducted from my employees' paychecks. Is that really what you're saying?
There are three or four companies in Illinois looking to do that right now. Yeah. They're saying, listen, we can't take advantage of the regular tax breaks, so let's supersize the tax breaks.
Otherwise, we'll leave the state. We'll move to a right to work for less state.
Absolutely. And you know what? I mean, we had Governor Perry from the state of Texas come into our state last year and put out a press release, and I've got the press release, and it makes me ill every time I look at it. It said things like, congratulations to Illinois businesses who have managed to weather the storm in Illinois. Now come to Texas where you can truly thrive. So, you know, it's not the United States of Texas. It's the United States of America.
Right.
And we cannot be chopping each other off at the knees, trying to lure businesses from one state to another, from one city to another.
Yeah, this is just wrong. Well, it's also Rick Perry running for president.
Well,
I mean,
whatever it is, you know, in Kansas and Missouri, I understand they've made a pact where they've said, we're not going to do this to each other anymore. We're not going to be held.
Yeah, but Kansas and Missouri are not two states that it's not, you know, typically what's happening is this is happening in places like, you know, Seattle. And Boeing played this game with Washington State. In fact, they're doing it right now with the mechanics.
Yep.
And, you know, if you don't like it, we'll move to South Carolina.
Right.
And you know, typically is industrial states, high wage states versus the old South. Or not versus, but, well, yeah, versus, because, you know, these states in the South are saying, you know, come on down, we'll give you free, not just tax breaks. They're giving them free land.
Yep.
They're giving them, you know, 10-year tax abatements. You know, they're offering to subsidize their employees if they're low-wage employees. You know, and now we've discovered that, you know, a Walmart costs the local community $1 million just in what we're paying for the food stamps and you know, various benefits for their employees so that they can survive. You know, it's Medicaid and things like that. It's insane.
But what we could do as a community, as a small business community, is we could demand better. I mean, there's... You always hear small business is the backbone of the economy. We hear it all the time. We could come together and we could say, listen, that is not true economic development. You know, if you're going to give tax breaks, give them to everybody, or put that money into infrastructure, or put that money into real economic stimulus,
right,
like education, like trade schools. But, you know, that's what we're trying to do here in Illinois. We're trying to bring business owners together and say, let's have some sound, real good economic policies.
We had in the last hour a caller called up and asked Senator Sanders, you know, why do you think that these big companies don't care that they're destroying the American middle class? And he said, because they don't give a damn. I think that's a verbatim phrase.
Well,
he said that, you know, they now have an international market. You know, there's 300 million people in the Chinese middle class now. It was zero 30 years ago, but there's 300 million of them now.
They also have a conflict of interest. I mean, they've got shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they have loyalty to their community. I'd like to see that loyalty to the community, the loyalty to the small business community that trickles down to your local communities, to your families.
Hey, businesses do, but the big businesses don't. They don't give a damn.
Well,
they just, you know, these are transnational corporations now. And, they're you know, General Electric last year did more business outside the United States than inside the United States. Do you think that they're going to care about? I mean, I don't want to make this super political. I know that you're not so much about politics as about advocating for small business, but forgive my going off on this.
No, that's okay.
That's edge tax credits. Also, the last time we talked, you were developing a health insurance co-op here in Illinois for small business people. Tell me how that's going.
Fantastically, actually. I mean, this is a perfect example of small businesses coming together, demanding a product that can compete with the four large insurance companies that have been dominating the market and raising our insurance premiums for the past 10 years. We were able to get legislation passed, not we. A whole community of small business owners came together. We said we need this. Legislation was passed, and now we have a cooperative in Illinois. And that is
a nonprofit
insurance company owned by small business owners, operated by our advocates, no shareholders. You know what? Let's take all the intellectual capital that's going to run this thing and put it into stabilizing rates and to providing quality care. And you know what? It's free market, so people who like the free market, hey, just let us compete, right? Mm-hmm. Health insurance shouldn't be divvied up between four large insurance companies. So we can compete, and I'm very, very excited about it. And the SBAC is going to have a private exchange as well businesses, for our business owners, so people can get in, shop, and see some real good benefits that can help small businesses.
I so wish we had something like that in the D.C. area. We're seeing a big increase in our health insurance rates coming up our little business.
Yeah, and I think co-ops are, you know, that's power of critical mass. And, you know, the shame of it, Tom, is that only 25 states got funded for co-ops because during the fiscal cliff debate, they cut the funding last year. Illinois was actually the last state to get funded for a co-op.
Amazing.
So I think every state should have them. There needs to be competition in the insurance industry with people who are truly dedicated to trying to lessen insurance rates.
You know, Elliot Richardson, he is the CEO of the Small Business Advocacy Council here in Illinois, SBACIL.org. Check it out. Elliot, thanks for being with us.
Tom, thank you so much for having me on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And we'll be right back with Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Annalisa, watching Free Speech TV in Carson City, Nevada. Hey, Annalisa, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Long time no talk to.
Thank you.
Yes, Tom, I'd like for everybody, you know, with my trusty little C-SPAN booklet, I see people on the news, and I call them, and I talk to them, and I have asked so many people in Washington, why not one person in the upper house or the lower house or the administration will come out and say, why are we the only country in the world, especially industrialized country in the world, that has health care for profit?
Right.
You know, as we speak, right now, the president is talking with all the top CEO companies in the healthcare industry. They're in his office. And I don't understand why he just takes them and says, get out of my office. We don't want this anymore. Why don't you go peddle your wares to any other country that's going
on? Well, one of the problems is that all of these guys that he's sitting with are worth hundreds of millions, and in one case, billions of dollars personally, and they represent companies that are worth hundreds of billions of dollars who give millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars to politicians. And because the Supreme Court has decided to turn the United States into a corporate oligarchy, and they have. They've, you know, very aggressively over the last 30 years with a series of decisions culminating in Citizens United. The Supreme Court has done this. The president has really no choice but to deal with these people. But I'm with you. You know, we had a caller earlier who asked the question of Bernie, and he put it in the perfect frame. I had never even considered it, but it was the perfect frame. He said, in the United States, it's illegal to sell body parts. You know, it is illegal to you can't say I'll sell you a kidney. You know, it's against the law because it's considered immoral. Why is it not considered immoral to say, I'm going to make a profit on whether or not you get sick or stay well? That's crazy.
Well, Tom, all I want to say is here's my bullet list going back. Hmm. Number one, we need a constitutional amendment to repeal Citizens United.
Yeah.
Two, we need to bring back the Anti-Sherman Act that Reagan took care of.
Yeah, the Sherman Antitrust Act.
We need to bring back Glass-Steagall, not the Chris Dodd, Bernie Frank thing. Four, we need to repeal the Future Modernization Act, the Graham Leach Bilby, you know. Mm. And because the problem is this, pure capitalism is as bad as pure communism. There needs to be a balance of socialism and capitalism. And the very least we can have in this country is to have education and health as a unilateral thing. It shouldn't be piecemealed out to the states. It should come from Washington, D.C. That's what I have to say.
I totally agree. I mean,
all I'm saying is people get the hold of the number of Congress, and they can direct you to your representatives and call them up and keep telling them, hey, how come we are the only one that have health care for profit?
Right. Right. You know, the problem, Anna Marie, or Annalisa, is that a lot of people, when you say that, they're going to look at you like you just stepped off a spaceship from Mars, because they have no idea that every other country in the world, or every other developed country in the world, has basically outlawed for-profit health care, with the exception of, you know, super high-end plans that are, you know, if you'd like catered meals in your hospital room kind of thing. Annalisa, brilliant. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here. My book, The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America and What We Can Do About It, is just now available at all fine bookstores. Don't miss my letter to my great-grandchildren and what it means. And if you're in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area or environs, you are welcome to drop by tomorrow, 6 to 9 o'clock tomorrow night at the Operating Engineers Hall on Anthony Lane in South Minneapolis. Common Good Books is going to be there. They will have copies of, in fact, actually, for you have to buy a ticket to get in, and it includes food and drinks and me, and I'm going to give a talk, and we'll do a Q&A, and I'll sign books, and I'll have a glass of wine with you. And you get a book with the cost of admission. So you've got to go over to am950radio.com and sign up for this gig. It's tomorrow, Saturday, November 16th, at Operating Engineers Hall. And if you happen to be listening to a replay of this show at some other hour or time, then, you know, just so you know, tomorrow is, for me right now, live on this Friday. Tomorrow is Saturday, November 16th. It is being brought to you by Minnesota's Progressive Talk, AM950. And we are very, very grateful that they're doing this and helping us get this out. And, of course, it's for my new book, The Crash of 2016. So it's Friday. Anything goes Friday. Let's pick up your calls. Ashes in Palatine, Illinois. Hey, Ashes, what's up?
All right, Tom. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, do you know what specific industries will be affected by the TPP and how it – I'm not – I don't understand how the TPP affects our sovereignty, so if you can explain that as well, too.
Sure. First of all, my understanding is that basically all industries are going to be affected by the TPP because it's going to affect the way that we bank, it's going to affect the way that we engage in politics, it's going to affect the intellectual property, it's going to affect the ability to compete. There are specific areas that are discussed. There are specific chapters or categories or pieces of it, but I don't think that anybody doing business in America is not going to be affected by this in one way or the other. And the way that we lose sovereignty is the same way that we already lost some of our sovereignty with NAFTA and GATT, the WTO. And that is I can tell you how it works in NAFTA. In NAFTA, there is, and you can easily find this, just, you know, go to DuckDuckGo and plug in NAFTA Chapter 11, and you'll find out what I'm talking about. Chapter 11 of NAFTA sets up what's called a trade tribunal. And these are three-judge courts, basically. And the judges are not necessarily, occasionally there's a representative of a country, but typically they are representatives of corporations. And, for example, when the Mexican tuna fishers said it's unfair and illegal that in the United States they have passed a law saying that you can't catch tuna in a way that also kills dolphins, the industry sued the United States of America. And the lawsuit went not to an international court, but it went to the NAFTA court. And the NAFTA court said, yep, you're right. This is a violation of free trade. And because we had signed NAFTA, and we, you know, and when you sign a treaty, the Constitution says treaties become the supreme law of the land. They supersede everything, arguably with the exception of the Constitution, but they supersede any laws passed by Congress. And so that law by Congress that said that it was illegal to sell tuna in the United States that had been harvested, where the tuna had been caught in a way that killed dolphins, that was illegal, and that Mexican, dolphin dead tuna could then come into the United States. And in fact, we could no longer enforce the law against our own people. And there was a similar one that had to do with EDTA, there's a gasoline additive that was leaching into the water in California, and they had passed a law against this, and the company that makes it up in California sued. And I don't recall if this was under NAFTA or the WTO, but it went to one of these trade tribunals, and California lost. And so, you know, the stuff is still in our gasoline, or it was when I wrote Unequal Protection, when I wrote about this stuff back a decade ago. There was another one where there was a funeral home in Alabama or Mississippi, somewhere down south, a chain of funeral homes, and a funeral home company in Canada sued them and said that the practices that you're engaging in are anti-competitive because, you know, we want to do it our way or whatever. There was some technical deal. And they won. In other words, our government can no longer protect our people. We no longer live by our laws. We end up living by the laws of the TPP. We end up living by the laws of NAFTA and WTO. And that's why we've lost 50,000 factories in the last, since 2000, since George Bush came into office. It's why we've probably lost 100,000 factories or more since Ronald Reagan's presidency. And it's why and how we lose sovereignty in these things. Ashes, thanks a lot for the call. Jason in D.C. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? This TPP thing that's going through, the recent stuff with Syria.
Well, we don't know that it's going through or not. We've got over 100 members of the Democratic caucus in Congress who've signed a letter saying we're opposed to it. You've got to fast-track authority that would lead to it. You've got 30, I believe, Republican members so far that have signed a letter saying we're not going along with this. I'm very skeptical that this is going to happen, but go ahead, Jason.
The thing that stands out in my mind is if I'm sitting here and I'm looking across the aisle and I see Mitt Romney, Obama, McCain, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, and I'm seeing them with how they have voted on Syria, how they would have voted on the NSA, and probably how they're going to vote or want to vote on TPP.
Hmm.
Again, I'm realizing that, again, there's a huge group of these authoritarian people that are out there that it didn't matter who you voted for. Guess what? The president, whether he be Mitt Romney or Obama, probably would have been in favor of this TPP.
On this one particular issue, you're right. And this is why it's so important that people like you and me, Jason, you and the Republican Party, me and the Democratic Party, show up and take over these parties.
Not in the Republican Party.
It's happening. The people who signed the we're not going to go along with the TPP and with Fast Track Authority, the Republicans in the House of Representatives are almost exclusively Tea Partiers.
Not with the Republican Party. Let's just make that clear.
Why is that?
I'm a libertarian.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
Don't lump me in with them.
See, I think if you really think, if you're a libertarian and you really believe those principles, the Libertarian Party is never going to run a serious candidate for president, but the Republican Party will. So if enough libertarians infiltrated the Republican Party, you'd have a shot at it. If enough Greens infiltrated the Democratic Party, they'd have a shot at it. I think that, there's this two-party system that was created by the way our Constitution is set up, and I think that, we should be exploiting it. Jason, thanks for the call. Good luck.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, you can be a libertarian and a Republican. You can be a Green and a Democrat. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. From WCBT in Chicago, and tomorrow I'll be with the help of KTNF AM 950 in Minneapolis, Minnesota's Progressive Talk. We will be tomorrow 6 p.m. tomorrow Saturday 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Operating Engineers Hall on Anthony Lane. It does require a ticket, and the ticket includes a book. Excuse me. There's a price for the ticket, and the ticket includes a book and food and drinks and me. And we're going to have a great time tomorrow night. So looking forward to seeing you there then. It is Anything Goes Friday. Let's pick up your calls here. Marcia.
Yeah, Marcia.
Marcia in Andrea, North Carolina. It's the type is a little bit smaller here. I'm doing this remote, and I'm looking at a smaller screen than I'm
it's
used
okay.
to.
Okay.
So what's up?
So I have an idea of how we might be able to move at least some of us towards single payer. It involves a petition, so you guys, it'll be on Tom's Facebook page when I'm finished. But you saw how those folks that had gotten those cancellation letters over plans that probably weren't any good anyway, they all came screaming, "You promised us, you promised us, you promised us."
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, they caused the president to actually break his own law. And so I'm thinking all of us in these red states that were supposed to get Medicaid and our states that haven't taken the money, we need to scream, "You promised us, you promised us, you promised us," and force him to create a federal exchange for us in the Medicare system. Take that money that he was going to give to the states and make us eligible, carve out a bracket. People who are in these red states who have the income right can get Medicare. And that's 36 states worth of people.
Yeah.
I think
these are the states that basically got screwed by the Supreme Court. and by the Republican governors or legislatures. The problem, Marcia, I realize I sound incredibly cynical saying this, but the problem is that you're talking about, you know, let me set this up properly. The people who had health insurance plans and did not qualify for government subsidies were typically people making over $60,000 a year. You know, more than 400% of poverty, no government subsidy, and they were buying health insurance, and their health insurance rates might go up, or they, you know, they liked their policy and it's going to change now and whatever, that kind of thing. And so those were the people that the media was talking about, because the media really cares about those people because they're consumers. They buy a lot of product, and that, you know, the advertisers are interested in that, and the media is all about making a profit. And especially the television media. All the radio stations are too, but I think their audience is broader, frankly. And also that's the market, the upper middle class and people above the upper middle class. That's the Republicans, right? That's who they're catering to. So of course that outrage had to be responded to. You're talking about people who are making under $20,000, under $25,000 a year, and more than whatever the minimum is in your state, and it's as low as $1,800 a year, I think, in Louisiana. I don't know what it is in North Carolina, a couple thousand dollars a year, who fall into that donut hole where they make too much to qualify for Medicaid and not enough to frankly be able to buy a health insurance plan and get a subsidy on the exchange. And those are referred to in political circles as, quote, poor people. And politicians don't give a damn about them, and neither does the press. And that, I mean, it's a crime in America that that's a reality. But I agree with you. It would be wonderful if people...
Well, we should try at least. We have a WhiteHouse.gov petition. We need 100,000 at least. And we need to just keep screaming, you promised us, you promised us, you promised us.
Yeah.
And maybe he can say, well, hey, I promised them too. So, you know, it wasn't as if he needed anybody's permission to make the change that he did. Mm-hmm. So as long as we don't pass a bill that takes that power from him in this bill, he can still make changes in his bill.
I wonder if it would be possible. See, I think that the Medicare rules are so nailed down and buttoned up after all these years that probably he can't do it. But if administratively he could make people who aren't eligible for Medicaid eligible for Medicare, boy, would that be a huge step toward single payer.
My question is, is that money already in a pile, or was it something that they were just going to pay for as they needed?
No, the money was appropriated by Congress.
So then it can be put into the Medicare system and be a, call it a different name. They will administer it, but it won't really be Medicare. You know, you got to.
No, I understand. I think it would require an act of Congress, because the president can only move money within an existing program. He has to follow the intent of Congress. Congress appropriated that money for Medicaid and said to the states, here it is, take it if you want it. If you don't want it, then, you know, don't take it. Based on the Supreme Court decision, originally it was, here it is, you've got to take it. So because that's in the Medicaid program, I'm quite sure that the executive branch, the president, does not have the power to move it out of that and into the Medicare program. They're separate programs. It would require an act of Congress.
Can he call it a federal exchange, just like he made a federal exchange?
You know, there may be some way to do it. I think that you're onto something here, Marcia. And the big point is, you know, I never thought he should have apologized. I think he should have gone on the offensive. I think, you know, I was listening to National Public Radio this morning when I woke up in the clock radio in my hotel room here, you know, and it comes on and one of the announcers says in a straight voice, I mean, you know, as if he's telling the truth in the news, he says, the president apologized for lying to Americans. And I'm like, wait a minute, he didn't apologize for lying to Americans. He apologized or deceiving Americans, however they say it on NPR. He apologized for people being frustrated by the system. and for, you know, for his saying something that people misconstrued, basically, and for the system not working the way it's supposed to. But he didn't apologize for lying to people. And yet that phrase, that Republican phrase, is now being repeated. It was repeated this morning on National Public Radio, and or at least on the local station here in Chicago. But I think it was the national feed. And I was just horrified by that. But this is, you know, but Marcia, I think you've got a great idea. Let's push him to do something about the people in the 36 states where the governors of the legislatures have said, you know, to hell with the poor people in our states. We're not going to take the federal money. You're onto it, Marcia. Thank you. You always offer brilliant insights when you call in. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to WCPT's web stream there. Curtis in Lake Elsinore, Vermont, listening on WDEV. Hey, Curtis, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Curtis.
Curtis, if you could take us off speakerphone. It sounds like you're in the bottom of a tin can.
Yeah, well, we're out here in the middle of nowhere.
Can you pick up the phone?
All right. Okay, can Curtis? You hear me now?
Yeah. If that's as good as it's going to get, just go ahead.
All right. Well, what I wanted to say is... I mean, I really enjoy your show, but Bernie's an idiot. And I kind of have my reservations about you. I'm kind of a moderate, but I didn't realize that you were left. So that kind of irritates me.
Curtis, I can't do anything about that. I mean, I'm sure that there are good therapists in the area, and if being irritated is a concern of yours, you might want to contact them. But I can't change who I am to accommodate your feelings.
Because Obamacare and Bernie, I mean, I belong to the belong to a union, and we've given Bernie thousands of dollars, and he's not doing everything we want him to do.
Yeah. Curtis, is there any politician that you know of that does everything you want?
Yeah, John F. Kennedy.
Okay, but he's dead.
Yeah, well, his spirit's still alive.
Yeah, well, okay, so what would you suggest that we do right now to get America back on track, Curtis?
I would suggest that we repeal Obamacare and go back to where we were.
So that when you get sick, your insurance company can dump you. You really want to do that?
That's not true.
It is true. One quarter of all bankruptcies in the United States are because somebody got sick and they had health insurance and their health insurance company dumped them. It's called rescission, and health insurance companies do it tens of thousands of times a year to Americans. As soon as you get sick, they say, we're just dropping your coverage, and usually it's because they found some little technicality, like 20 years earlier you'd had an infection that you forgot to report when you filled out the form. Or they say, you know, your $1,000 a month policy is now going to be a $7,000 a month policy. You want to keep it? And you say, I can't afford that, and then you're gone. This has been made illegal by Obamacare, and I can't, you know, Curtis, it's, you know, your feelings notwithstanding, I'm astounded that you haven't done the research to figure that out. We'll be right back. It is 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Tomorrow, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Operating Engineers Hall. Go to am950radio.com. Welcome back. Deacon in Boulder Creek, California, watching Free Speech TV on the local cable system there. Hey, Deacon, what's up?
I would like to talk about this Supreme Court case, Salinas v. Texas. It just came down.
Here's okay.
If a policeman asks you a question and you do not answer, you must specifically invoke the Fifth Amendment by name, or your silence will be presented to the jury as evidence of your guilt.
Yes.
So what this does is takes away your presumption of innocence, which is the cornerstone of the whole system.
Yes, I agree. what we are seeing, John Roberts and his and the four other right wingers on his court have consistently ruled for the police and for the big corporations and for the billionaires and against average people, working people, minorities, women, just right across the board. I mean, we have this constitutional monarchy that we have in the United States, and now driven by the Supreme Court, has been so destructive to our rights, to our Constitution, and they do it in this theory of originalism. Everything should be just like it was in the early days. Oh yeah, well let's go back to slavery, Scalia. Although I'm not sure that he would. Well, I don't. That's
how innocence goes all the way back to the Code of Hammurabi. It's one of the most basic principles of any justice system.
Yeah.
And Scalia and Thomas want to take it further than that. This is a quote from their concurring opinion. A defendant is not compelled to be a witness against himself simply because a jury has been told that it may draw an adverse inference from his silence. How is that not being compelled?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, what universe do these people live in?
They live in a universe where Scalia and Thomas go out and hang out with the Koch brothers once or twice a year and get paid large fees to give speeches, and Ginny Thomas gets, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in income for hanging out with the Heritage Foundation, and Scalia's son is, you know, making some bucks in some way in this field. They live in a very rarefied world. They're the kings. They literally are the kings. This is the I keep saying we have a constitutional monarchy in the United States. The Supreme Court has more power in the United States than the Queen of England does in England. And we pretend like we're so noble because we don't have a monarchy. We have a democracy. Nonsense. We absolutely have a monarchy. It's called the Supreme Court. And it's not written into the Constitution. There is no place in the Constitution where it says that the Supreme Court has the power to either strike down laws passed by Congress or make laws like, for example, what you just suggested. And it's wrong. It's just wrong. I so want to write a book about this. It's just, you know, I haven't had the time.
So basically, it is what it is, and we just have to live with it.
Well, here's the important thing to remember, Deacon. The most important or the most powerful position in the United States is justice at the Supreme Court, particularly if you're in the majority. And those persons are put in there in those positions by the president. So it's really important, particularly as we go into the next 4, 5, 6 years when we're going to see at least 4 of our Supreme Court justices age out of their 70s into their 80s. It's really important that we have a Democrat in the White House. And frankly, the 2014 elections, the midterm elections, are going to set up the White House elections. So this, we've got 2 really important elections coming up that will have to do with the Supreme Court. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, and find out everything that's going on in the world today of import or consequence. Victoria, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I am great. Greetings from the Windy City. Tomorrow I'll be in Minneapolis. And
ooh, that could be a little bit nippy this time of year.
It is nippy, but, you know, I like nippy. I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Michigan. And if you'd like to have a glass of wine with me tomorrow night and a nice buffet dinner and hear a speech and get a book, you can go over to am950radio.com and pick up a ticket.
That sounds a blast.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah. It's going to be a great time. So what's going on in the world?
Well, President Obama has been and may still be brainstorming, is his word, with healthcare executives, CEO of the insurance companies, about ways to fix the troubled healthcare law. He wants to make sure that everybody makes sure what their options are. He says because of choice and competition, a whole lot of Americans who've always seen health insurance as out of reach are going to be in a position to purchase it. Just we know the demand is out there. And talk about, despite the problems with the website, over 1 million people applied. But, of course, what he's also going to be getting is an earful about his fix yesterday, which insurers are saying may not be workable. Also today, the House voted 261 to 157 on a bill from Representative Fred Upton, Republican, that would allow health insurance companies to renew individual insurance policies and sell similar policies to new customers next year, even if the coverage doesn't provide all the benefits and consumer protections required by the new health care law. So 39 Democrats defected to vote in favor of the bill, and 4 Republicans defected from their party, too, because it wasn't conservative enough, and they may have primaries.
Yeah, and this really has nothing to do with trying to pass legislation. This is going to die in the Senate. This has to do with the election coming up. This is
very likely to die in the Senate. I mean, there may be a bill in the Senate, but it's more likely to be similar to Mary Landrieu's bill, which is also being worked on, and nothing's likely to happen there very fast. So, but that's the latest on that.
Yeah.
Interesting development in Albania this afternoon. The chemical weapons in Syria, which they've now looked at 22 of the 23 sites, and they're saying, okay, so we've got the chemical weapons, next step, destroy them. Thing is, they've got to do that out of country, and Norway's already said, NIMBY, we're not having them.
Mm-hmm.
Albania this afternoon said, NIMBY. So now the question is, they don't want them either, and they've got to find a place to take them. Well, you know, that's quite a big ask. Could we bring in 1,000 tons of chemical weapons, please, to destroy them, and then you're going to get the residue? So now they're looking at France and Belgium, and we'll see how they respond, and this all has to be done by early next year.
But Albania is a very poor country, and this could be a very profitable venture, and if it's done properly, it might not be so dangerous to the local populace. So you think Albania?
They said no. They've had days of protests, and they recently destroyed their own chemical stockpile.
Albania said no. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I missed
Albania
that. I'm sorry.
They said no. They've said N-O.
Wow.
We won't do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, so we'll see how this shakes out. I mean, maybe we should put them on some of our aircraft carriers or whatever and take them out to sea and do it.
That maybe, I mean, they've got to start looking at options.
Yeah, because, I mean, we could probably outfit, you know, one of the old big Navy ships that's about to be decommissioned and put a giant, you know, toxic waste disposal plant in the middle of it. And yeah, I'm sure that Halliburton would love to do that for 200% profit. And you know, Syria's got a seacoast; they could just park at the port and put it on, take it out into the middle of the what are they on the Mediterranean or on the? And it's not the Mediterranean, or is it?
I'm not sure.
Whatever the sea is there, whatever the ocean is, and just do it at sea.
That may be something they'll start looking at, because it wouldn't surprise me if France and Belgium both say no.
Yeah, well, when you see the president, tell him my idea.
Well, absolutely.
As you always do, I know.
always. The Postal Service today reported a $5 billion net loss for the fiscal year that ended September the 30th, a significant improvement over last year, when the agency reported a $15.9 billion loss.
Mm.
Now, mail volume continued to decline, but their operating revenue was up a little bit. Operating expenses were down. So they said it's the first growth in revenue since 2006. It is the seventh consecutive year they've had a net loss. They attribute the improving finances to an improving economy, reduction in staffing, consolidation of mail processing plants, and reduction in the hours of small rural post offices. And the net loss, the 2006 law requiring the agency pre-fund future retirees' health benefits amounting to a $5 billion payment each year for 10 years.
Right. This was the poison pill that was put in 2006. By the Republicans.
Right, exactly. And they've defaulted on 3 annual payments into the health care fund.
Yeah.
And there is postal legislation pending in Congress.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders has the best bill. He's got over 20 co-sponsors.
Yeah, he's got a very interesting bill. All the legislation is languishing now. I don't think anything's going anywhere, actually, to be honest with you.
Well, nothing's going anywhere in this Congress right now.
No, nothing's going to get done before the end of the year. And Toronto City Council has voted overwhelmingly to strip embattled Mayor Rob Ford of some of his powers. His authority to appoint and dismiss the deputy mayor and his executive committee may be affected.
Oh, interesting. So if they can't get rid of him, they're going to just chip away at him.
Yes, make him ineffective and impotent.
Yes. Well, good on them. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
It's always nice to hear your voice. We'll be back with more of Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, live from Chicago on my way to Minneapolis.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And happy Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from Chicago tonight. Tomorrow morning I'll be hopping on a plane up to Minneapolis, where tomorrow evening from 6 to 9 I will be at Operating Engineers Hall on Anthony Lane. And if your ticket says anything other than that, ignore what it says and come to the Operating Engineers Hall. The first 40 tickets that got printed had the wrong address on them. But you have to have a ticket. The ticket gets you it's not a free book. I mean, you're paying for it when you pay for the ticket. But it gets you a copy of my new book, The Crash of 2016, which I will be pleased to autograph for you. And food and drinks and a fine time will be had by all. And I will be giving a goodly rant tomorrow night. So. That's tomorrow in Minneapolis at the Operating Engineers Hall. But go to am950radio.com and get your tickets. Minnesota's Progressive Voice station, KTNF's website, am950radio.com. So, Wyatt, Steelacoon, Washington? Is that what it is?
Steelacoon, it's an Indian name.
Ah.
For the Steilacoom tribe.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what's up, Wyatt?
I realized that when the president signs a bill into law, the plan for executing the law has to be drawn up generally. The Congress doesn't write it that specifically. But it sure looks to me like in this case, President Obama is executing a line item veto.
In other words, that he's breaking his own law.
But we've had presidents for decades complaining that they did not have a line item veto.
Yeah.
Picking something out of the law and changing it.
This law gave the executive branch very broad discretionary powers to implement the specific goals of the law within the context of the funding of the law, and which is how he was able to delay the employer mandate for a year. And so, you know, this piece of it, I guarantee you, particularly given the fact that he's jumping because the conservatives have been yelling jump.
I hate it.
Yeah, me too. And I think that he never should have done it. He never should have apologized in the first place. The whole thing, I mean, he just, it's like you don't feed the sharks, you know. But he made that mistake, and now he's, and now he's, I think, compounding it, my personal opinion. But, you know, it's Monday morning quarterbacking is always easy, and he's got a hell of a lot more difficult job than I do. But what I do know is that if what he was doing was illegal in any way at all, the Republicans would use that against him, too, and they would be screaming about that, and they're not. So I'm quite confident that what he's doing is within the purview of the law. But I get your point. I get your point, and it's a good one. Wyatt, thanks for the call. Joanne in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Joanne, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you again. I don't know if you remember, I called in a few weeks ago, and we talked about our giant petition that we've got going here in Clifton.
Oh, yeah, for gun violence prevention.
Gun violence prevention, yep. Well, I've become part of a coalition that's been formed in New Jersey. And what we're trying to do, actually not we're, I mean, I'm part of the coalition, I didn't start this, but Ceasefire New Jersey decided to put this coalition together. And what we're doing is gathering all the groups that are working on gun violence prevention, so like Mayors Against Illegal Guns, Bergen County Coalition for Peace, Organizing for Action, which who I'm representing, Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, Brady Campaign, Million Moms March. So everybody, we're all part of this coalition. So we were on a phone call the other day, and the Moms Demand had this incredible, incredible idea that I had to tell you about. Next month, as you know, is the one-year anniversary of the shooting of the kids at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut.
Right.
And we actually did a program last night here in Clifton about it and had a parent and two of his children come down to speak about this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really touching, amazing event we had last night.
Yeah.
But at any rate, the Moms Demand Action came up with this idea that on the morning of the shooting, which would be December 14th, and the shooting was at 9:35 a.m., that we should get our faith-based community in all the churches to ring the bells 26 times for all the victims.
Do you know what day of the week that's going
nationally.
To be?
Wouldn't that be incredible?
It would. Do you know what day of the week that's going to be this year?
I can find out in 2 seconds for you. Hang on. Calendar. December, it's going to be on a Saturday.
Hmm. That would be...
So Saturday morning.
Yeah, which makes it a whole lot easier, I think, in some ways. That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. We're in here in Clifton. We're planning our ceremony commemorating it on the Friday night before. We're going to do a candlelight vigil at the City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So our details on that will be on our OFA Clifton team page again.
Mm-hmm.
But there are going to be lots of, I can't say celebrations, but commemorations.
Yes.
Nothing to celebrate. But we're doing it all over New Jersey, and I'm sure there's going to be things all over the country. And I think that people should get on board because we have a lot of work to do on this end. I mean, nothing happened since last year.
Yeah.
I mean, New Jersey actually strengthened some of our laws, and Connecticut did too. But on a federal level, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I agree. And there, when you say there's nothing to celebrate, there's a whole deeper level of tragedy that of the truth of that statement. I mean, obviously there's nothing to celebrate in these children losing their lives, but what should have come out of that is at least, you know, legislation that takes weapons of war out of the hands of people in the United States, that closes the gun show loophole, that prevents people who have been adjudicated as mentally ill or abusive or criminals from getting guns of any kind, and that frankly, in my opinion, I would take it a step farther, that requires gun owners to have liability insurance. I think it's just crazy that if that kid had killed those children by hitting them with a bus or with a truck or with a car, they, you know, Geico would be paying out $1 million to each family. But because he killed them with a gun, nobody is paying out anything to anybody. In fact, maybe we should, you know, even consider legislation requiring the NRA to be responsible for that liability insurance. But it just blows my mind the cavalier attitude we have towards guns in this country, and not just guns, but weapons of war, which I don't consider guns. You know, these are not things that are used for target shooting. They're not things that are used for hunting, and they're not things that are used for self-defense. They're used for hunting and killing human beings. and that we allow them to be sold in the United States. And in fact, that there are some people who celebrate them in the United States, like those guys who showed up the other day when the moms were getting together to just, you know, have strategy session at a local restaurant. Just makes me sick. Joanne, thanks a lot for the heads up on that. Where can people find out more about it?
Well, I'll put it up on my OFA Clifton team page. That's facebook.com.
Right.
OFA, Organizing for Action, Clifton team. And
okay.
Please tell people, everybody out there, get involved with your OFA chapters. We're doing lots of good work all over the country. I was in Washington 2 weeks ago, and I got to shake the hand of the man who signs the bills. I was very excited.
The man who signs the bills?
Yeah.
You mean President Obama?
I mean President Obama.
Oh, how cool is that?
I was extremely excited and very honored.
Yeah. Yeah, that's remarkable. So, and are there, and you said there's OFA groups all across the United States that are taking this up.
Absolutely.
As a main. Okay.
Oh, yeah. We were down there to talk about the Affordable Care Act, and that's what we were in a meeting on that. And I met people. I got the most incredible idea from some volunteers that are out in Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm going to take that up for the spring.
That is great.
A new idea for the spring. So, yeah.
It is so wonderful to hear people becoming active rather than just complaining. You know, after all these years of doing radio here and hearing people complain, now I'm hearing people say, here's what I'm doing. And, you know, God bless you, Joanne. You are an inspiration to us all. Thank you for the call. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And if you're in the Minneapolis area tomorrow, come on over and hang out. Go to am950radio.com. And welcome back, Shannon in Oak Harbor, Washington. Hey, Shannon. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, it's an honor to speak to you today, Tom. And my husband is a contractor, and we frequently are fighting this inflationary economy that we live in. And so my husband was at a big box store. I won't use the name today. And we were discussing how prices have went up with one of the guys that works there. And he said, well, you know that why that is, don't you? And my husband said, no, I don't know why. And he said, well, he said, look at this item right here. He said it went up $1.50 yesterday. He said yesterday it was green, and today the edging on the wood is now pink. Same company selling it, only they've changed the coloration and they've named it a new product. And so, therefore, one, the company can say, well, we didn't really raise the cost of this. It's a new item. And it also doesn't go on the inflation index because it's a new item.
Right.
So my husband was kind of blown away. And he said, well, like what on this aisle other stuff is done or handled that way? And the guy said, well, point at something. And so my husband went over and started pointing at items. And he said, well, this used to be. And it was this price, but now it's a different item.
Okay.
And this used to be a different price, and now it's a new item. And it was like two-thirds of everything on the aisle. My husband was blown away. And so as a small company, you know, that fights inflation and the changes of prices every day when we go into a big box store or any store for that matter, we were amazed to find out that here we are, we're saying that things are going up, and yet we don't really hear a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, according to this guy, is we don't hear a lot about it is it never gets on to, it's never gets into the government scale of inflation because it's a new item made by the same company with a new name.
And you know why this is possible, Shannon?
No.
Because in 1982, Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. It used to be, at that point in time, in 1982, in the media, for example, all of the newspapers, magazines, radio stations, television stations, and networks in the United States were owned by hundreds of companies. Now it's six companies, more than 90% of them. In 1982, there were probably thousands of companies that were making things that would end up in a store, you know, in a hardware store. Now there are probably dozens. And so what you have is as monopolies form, and they're not genuine monopolies because it's not just one company, but they're functional monopolies. It's two, three, four, five companies, and they all play the same game, and they all do the wink and nod, and they all basically fix prices. As we have moved from a broad-based, small business, highly competitive environment that we had before Ronald Reagan, when we were enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, to this monolithic environment where you have very big box stores, you know, no more mom and pop stores, and very big box manufacturers, they can play these kind of games and get away with it because they don't have any real competition. They have monopolies. And so, you know, it all began with Reagan. We need to start enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. We need to roll back the Reagan Revolution. Shannon, thank you for the call. That's a pretty horrible story, but you're you know, spot on. And your husband, the fellow who was talking to your husband, identified it perfectly. Thank you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on Anything Goes Friday, broadcasting live from Chicago on my way to Minneapolis, where if you go to am950radio.com, you can pick up a ticket to hang out with me tomorrow if you'd like. Joe in Willamette, Illinois. Hey, Joe, what's up? Or, excuse me, Willamette, right?
Yes, I'm glad the weather is working out for you while you're here in Chicago.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And but I wanted to address the guest you had that brought up the tax breaks that the corporations here are receiving.
Yeah, Elliot Richardson.
Right, and Illinois has a severe problem with not being able to generate enough revenue to pay for pension obligations, along with the underfunded pension fund from the state not contributing for 15 years, their bargain share of the obligation. And the governor, both of our major newspapers and several so-called civil-minded groups have been bombarding the media that there's this incredible crisis about the underfunded pensions and the obligations that need to be paid, and they're demanding that the state legislators reduce, you know, contracted compensation for all the state employees.
Right.
They've convened a special committee to work on this, and they're going to call back the legislators for an emergency session to try to deal with this, and this is, you know, a big issue, you know, all around. The exception of the House Senate leader, Cullerton, who says it's not a crisis, it's an issue that needs to be dealt with on a long-term plan. It's just become this common notion that we're going to be bankrupt without cutting back contracted benefits for state workers. But what's missing is any interest in cutting back the corporate tax breaks that are in you know, very...
that are causing this problem. Let's be honest about it.
No one's saying to reduce all of the business contracts that the state has by a certain percentage and receive the same services, although they expect all the employees to reduce their compensations and provide the same services.
Right.
And many employees have agreed to reduce compensation, you know, to help with the cause.
Oh, repeatedly over the last 30 years.
Right. But it's just not the civil-minded groups are all happy to have somebody else pay, but no one's looking at what they're receiving, you know, to provide assistance for this big problem.
Okay.
Also, corporate tax breaks seem incredibly monstrous waste of money in that they just give finances to individual corporations, but they do nothing for the whole infrastructure that's needed to provide a good community for those businesses. It doesn't create better, you know, electrical grids, it doesn't create better trucking routes, it doesn't create better streets, it doesn't create better schools and, you know, just quality of living for the whole state. It just goes right into the corporate pockets of one individual, you know, corporation instead of provide a better sense for the whole business community in the region. So,
right. Remarkable. Yeah, and I think Elliot Richardson did a brilliant job of laying it out. And it's not just an Illinois problem, by the way, Joe. It's happening all over the country. And basically what we're seeing is the wealthy states, the high-wage states, the industrial states, are now being eaten alive. Their guts are being ripped out by the big corporations and the transnational corporations who are demanding that the wages go down, that the salaries go down. What they're going to do is they're going to reduce all of their states to the standard of living of Louisiana. And, you know, welcome to third world America. And I agree with Bernie Sanders that any state that gives tax breaks to corporations should lose their federal highway dollars. I don't see, you know, I think that's a great way to do it. Buck in Canby, Oregon. Hey, Buck, what's up?
Huh?
Buck?
Tom.
Hey, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Oh, hey, there you are. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's
yeah,
on
I was calling about, you know, all these cancellations. And
you mean the health insurance policies?
Yeah, yeah, all these insurance policies. And I'm hearing it's in the millions of policies that be canceled.
Well, the fact of the matter is that at this time last year, millions of policies were canceled. And at this time, 2 years ago and 3 years ago and 4 years ago, there's always millions of policies being canceled. It's just the Republicans are screaming about it.
Well, my point is that, you know, if it's because of the Affordable Care Act, what I'm hearing now, and if we'll just say these people are a million people paying $500 a month for their insurance, that's $6,000 a year. You're talking billions of dollars that the insurance companies are walking away from. Are they going out of business? What?
No,
they're
no.
What? $1,000. What if it's $2 million? I mean, it's billions.
Yeah. They're not, you know, the insurance companies are aggressively not canceling people and saying goodbye, see you later. Instead, what they're saying, the ones who are doing it with some integrity and honesty are saying, you know, this program, this policy that you have no longer is legal because it's basically like an exploding mortgage. You know, it's a defective product. It's like a car with a bad master cylinder and the brakes. And you can get a good program and you can buy it on the exchanges. If we're, you know, we're offering one on the exchanges. I know that I saw one letter from, I think it was a Blue Cross Blue Shield, where they said, we actually offer a plan similar to this on the exchange, and here's what it's, and you may be eligible for discounts, so please buy our product on the exchange. Then there are other companies, and there's one that's being sued right now by the federal government, another that's being sued by a bunch of customers, who are saying, we're canceling your policy. These are companies that are choosing not to participate in the exchanges in those states. So they really don't have an exchange policy. So they're saying, we're canceling your policy and we're going to roll you over to a more expensive policy. Automatically, you don't have to do anything at all. And that's when people do the math and realize that they're going to be paying an extra $1,500 a year or whatever. And you know, and they get all upset. And then in many cases, I mean, all the people who have gone on, or many of the people who have gone on Hannity's show, go over to MediaMatters.org and check this out. They go on Hannity's show and scream about, oh, my health insurance policy is now going over $1,000. It's insane. And then you ask them, did you ever bother to go to healthcare.gov and actually find out, you know, if you're eligible for, or call them if you can't make the website work, because they do answer the phone, and find out if you're eligible for government subsidies and if your prices are actually going to go down. They go, no, I haven't done that. You know, I'm conservative. I don't want to talk to the government. And it's like, you know, this is a tempest in a teapot, Buck. And if the president had just stood firm and fought it, well, actually, if the Democrats had stopped being so frightened and intimidated, I think the president made the decision he made because he was seeing so many defections among Democrats, which is really kind of sad, because they should have had his back. They should have been out there taking names and kicking ass of the Republicans and the health insurance companies. Buck, thanks for the call. Thanks for the call very much. It is Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, live from Chicago on my way to Minneapolis, where if you're in that neck of the woods, go to am950radio.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And about this time tomorrow, you and I can be having a glass of wine and talking about the crash of 2016. am950radio.com. Slightly unbalanced, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. We're broadcasting live, and a tip of the hat and many thanks to Charlie and Matt and Melissa and all the other, Chris, all the folks here at WCPT who have made it possible for me to do my show live from their studios 2 days in a row here. And to KTNF, to all the folks in Minnesota's Progressive Voice who are putting on the gig that I will be at tomorrow. If you go to am950radio.com, if you're in the Minneapolis area, pick up your tickets. And then next week, we'll be in Denver, we'll be in Los Angeles, I don't have the whole schedule in front of me, so I can't lay it all out, but it's all over in San Francisco and Portland. So it's all over at tomhartman.com, so you can go check it out. This is the Let's See How Ragged We Can Run Tom tour. Rodney in Chicago Heights, Illinois. Hey, Rodney. Thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Hey, I was at the book signing last night, and you had a pretty good crowd. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we had actually, there were people standing outside in the cold because the bookstore was so full of people. It was, you know, that woman with a stethoscope against the window, that was hysterical.
I didn't see that. I was back by the League of Women Voters.
I chatted
with her, and I asked her how many people she signed up. She said two. And she looked rather, you know, forlorn about it.
Well, I think that's probably because everybody who showed up was already a voter.
Yeah, that's how I took it.
Yeah.
And I also picked up a copy of Rebooting the American Dream, so I'm kind of torn as to which one I should read first. Any suggestions?
Well, Rebooting the American Dream is 11 chapters, and each chapter is a very specific policy prescription. You know, if I were president or if I was running the Democratic Party, these are the things I'd do. You know, one's on our trade policy, one's on Medicare Part E, on our health care policy, one's on wages and minimum wages and things like that, you know, another. So there's 11 specific chapters about the things that we need to do to basically turn America back into the great country it was in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, to roll back the Reagan Revolution. There's a chapter on tax policy as well. So you can read that anytime. And in fact, those are the things that I would like all of, you know, everybody to be taking those individual, the very simple, straightforward stuff and pushing it out to their legislators. Bernie Sanders, when he did his speech, his 9-hour filibuster on the floor of the Senate, read from Rebooting the American Dream, read from that book, and he wrote a cover letter, and he sent a copy of that book, where we delivered them. Actually, he didn't, but he wrote the cover letter to each one of his 99 colleagues in the United States Senate. He said, you know, this is, you got to read this book. I agree with it.
Okay, so rebooting is pretty much a standard, and the 2016 is more current.
The crash of 2016 is about how we're in the midst of, well, you heard my speech last night, we're in the midst of this economic disaster, and it's going to get worse before it gets better, and when it does, you need to get ready, and it's about how to get ready both for the economic problems and for the political opportunities that it's going to present.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine it getting any worse, but I'm sure it could.
Yeah.
But, continued success on your tour, and
I just
wanted to say it was nice to meet you.
Thank you, Rodney. Very nice to hear from you, and thanks for showing up last night. Great to meet you, too. Jerry in Long Island, New York. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah. Hi, how you doing, Tom? Yeah. Good luck on your book tour, by the way.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, I'd like to discuss Social Security and Medicare and the dangers that I believe lay ahead for these two great programs in the Congressional Budget Conference Committees, because although we have a great man like Senator Sanders on the Senate side of the Budget Committee, we also have someone like Paul Ryan, who is actually chairman of the House Budget Conference Committee. And my concern goes beyond him simply being on the committee. My concern is that there's a political sleight of hand going on here in this country, in my opinion, in the sense that at the same time we have so much of the media almost obsessively focusing most of our attention on the Republican versus Democratic war of words over Obamacare and all the problems with it. Meanwhile, with respect to both Social Security and Medicare and Republican proposed changes to it, out of sight and out of mind and behind closed doors in these conference committees, we have so many Democratic senators and Republican congressmen who are actually and inexcusably coming together to support Republican sort changes to both Medicare and Social Security that would gradually ruin these programs in the long run by a combination of both means testing and raising the age of eligibility for these great programs,
right,
and also by so greatly reducing the cost of living adjustments for Social Security.
Yeah, I don't know any Democrats who are talking about the former two, but the change CPI has been put on the table by the president and by some other Democrats, and I think it's not a good idea.
Yeah. Well, Democrats like Mark Warner have come out in favor of raising the age of eligibility for Medicare in the past, and he was on the Simpson-Bowles Commission.
Durbin
was quoted in Wall Street Journal as supporting raising the age of eligibility for Social Security all the way back in 2010 when the Simpson-Bowles.
Yeah, I think he walked that back pretty fast, though. But I share your concern, and if Americans don't, and Moss say enough, we've been suffering through austerity for 32 years now. Our infrastructure is falling apart. Our industrial base has collapsed. Our middle class is a fragment of what it used to be. Our students, our young people are massively in debt. The billionaires are richer than they've ever been before. The corporations are more profitable than they've ever been before. Enough already. We want to go back to an America that actually works for Americans rather than for transnational corporations that may even do business, more business outside than inside the United States. If enough of us say that, and part of that is standing up for Social Security and Medicare, part of that is standing up for our students, part of that is standing up for the Occupy movement, part of the, you know, all those things. Unless we do that, unless we engage and get politically active, they are going to win because they've got the money, they got the lawyers, they got the persistence, and they got a lot on the line. And many of them are absolute sociopaths, and they don't care about what it has, you know, the consequences, what it does to people. So, Jerry, excellent point. Thanks for the call. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Before I get to my main point, I just want to give you a name I use for capitalism, the system we've got. First of all, it's a kind of tinkle on economics. But lazy, unfair capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway.
Lazy, unfair, as opposed to laissez-faire. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, lazy, unfair capitalism. You've got how many millions of listeners do you have each day?
Weekly it's right. 2.7, I guess, according to Talkers Magazine.
So that's almost 1% of the population of the U.S.
Yeah, and then that doesn't also count the people who are watching on Free Speech TV, which seems to be about the same audience.
So out of 1% of the population show of your listeners, we should be able to find tens of thousands of people who are at very least qualified and able to run for local offices. Mm-hmm. So like if we had different county, if we had different election clerks and county clerks and so forth, in 2000 we would have had a different president. And
yes.
So I want to encourage people, you've got a year now to run for a local or state office and really change the world. Because, you know, we made the mistake of focusing on the top-end offices when it's really, like you see right now, the state legislators are the ones really changing the world.
And this is where the Tea Party, you know, they were on game.
Yeah. And one of the easiest offices around the country oftentimes to win is that of a state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many offices people run unopposed. And if you have good candidates, and again, you should have tens of thousands of good candidates who are listening right now, especially unemployed people. I mean, you've got at least, if it's 7% or so unemployment, I don't remember the number,
mm-hmm.
you should have at least 20,000 listeners right now who could go get a job by running for office. And some of these offices do pay well. Others are just part-time. And so people should remember that.
Yeah.
You've got to plan now, and you've got enough listeners to change the U.S.
I believe you're right, Jeff, and thank you for that inspirational message.
Anything from...
Go ahead. Jeff, finish your thought.
Okay.
Oh, I guess Jeff finished his thought. Okay. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Bob in Marseilles, Illinois. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, definitely Marseilles. Nobody down here speaks French.
Yeah.
I'm south of Route 80. I wish I'd have got up to see you last night. I'm sorry I didn't. In any event, I wanted to call. I think blaming President Obama for what he had to do yesterday and today, I can't really see, because basically he's under the screws. There is nothing else he can do. He's got 10% of the country that are supporting Tea Party people that approve of what Congress did when they shut the country down.
Right.
And he's got to deal with these people. Tom, I will never vote for another black man as long as I live.
What?
Tom, here's the thing. Until somebody figures out how to take those 10% of the people and either institutionalize them in a prison for...
Wait a minute. Are you saying, Bob, you won't vote for an African-American because you're afraid of the white racists?
No, I'm afraid of the way the white racists can manipulate the rest of the system. But that's not why I call. I call about health care.
Okay. Well, Bob, I'm sorry we're out of time, but you will have to pick up that conversation another time. But here's something to chew on, apropos of what you said, as odd or offensive as it may be to some people. There is an effort in the Republican redistricting programs to make the face of the Democratic Party increasingly dark for the purpose of catering to the white races for the Republicans.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And this is cynical racism that is being done by the Republican Party in a way that is just breathtaking. Welcome back. Carol, watching Free Speech TV in Dillon, Montana. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind?
Oh, I just thought I'd call and ask you if you've ever read a book called Advertising and the Media.
Who's the author?
I have no idea.
Hey, when did it come out?
My daughter brought it home from the University of Montana in 1990, I believe.
I may well have. I've read a lot of stuff on advertising and the media, but why do you ask?
On the very first page and very first chapter, I've never forgotten it. It explains how a lie told 10,000 times becomes the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the basic principle of, it seems like, the Republican Party.
I think you're right. It's something that Goebbels pointed out. And if you repeat a lie, and particularly if it's an audacious enough lie, if you make it a big enough lie, people say, well, they couldn't possibly say that if it wasn't true. Yes.
Yeah. And there's another thing, that guy that called about his health insurance policy, that, oh, they wouldn't cancel him.
Mm-hmm.
My mother belonged to, and my dad belonged to, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
From in the 1940s on until my dad passed away, then mom was eligible for Medigap insurance, and they covered her until she went to the hospital with pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And she was 87 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the next month they upped her premium to $399 a month. And that, my brother happened to be her insurance agent, and he started looking around right quick-like.
Yeah.
And found her another policy, because the next month he got notice of cancellation of her policy.
Yeah, and this is what the insurance company, you know, and they used to do, is they used to, if you got sick, they dumped you. As long as you were healthy, they took your money. And this is the major abuse that Obamacare puts an end to. And I think it's tragic that the president has said, we're going to let the health insurance companies sell these rip-off defective products for another year to people. It's just, you know, I realize the political pressure he's under. I realize the horrible position he's been put in part by the media repeating these lies, these Republican lies. But it's just a tragedy. It's just a tragedy. Carol, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing that with us. Dennis, watching Free Speech TV in Flint, Texas. Dennis, we've got just a minute to the break. You got a comment?
Hi, Tom. I think I'll have to speak quickly. Congratulations on your appearance on Democracy Now! You're absolutely terrific.
Thank you.
You're as an effective interviewee as you are an interviewer.
Thank you.
Having said that, I think I disagree with your position on the Kennedy assassination. Oliver Stone was on a few days before. And his view was that it was because Kennedy was in danger of ending the Cold War after he received a letter from Khrushchev saying we can't keep doing this. And I don't know, I may have got your view wrong, but it sounded like in line with Kerry's that Russia and Cuba had something to do with the assassination.
No, my view, it can be very simply summarized. Kennedy was killed by the mob, by Trafficante and Marcella.
Okay, I misunderstood that. I heard you mention something about Kerry's recent...
Well, that was the setup that Amy used. She said John Kerry just said, you know, something's rotten in Denmark. What do you think? So,
okay, I misunderstood. All right. Yeah. Okay, that was the point. I didn't disagree with it in the end.
But, you know, if you want to dig into it, we wrote a 900-page book on it called Legacy of Secrecy. And then Lamar just came out a couple weeks ago with a new book, Lamar Waldron, on the Kennedy assassination. It's only about a 400-page book that summarizes it very tightly and very nicely. Dennis, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Hey, thanks so much to my show director, Louise Hartman, to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for our video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everyone at the companies that syndicate and organizations that syndicate this program, Westwood One on commercial radio stations, Pacifica Radio on non-commercial radio stations, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Network on TV, on cable systems all across the country as radio, and Free Speech TV. carries this program simulcast as television on Dish Network and DirecTV, and all the cable providers who carry our program from Comcast to Manhattan Neighborhood Network and all the others. All the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to Progressive Voices Channel on TuneIn, to our newsletter editor Sue Nethercutt, and the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and most importantly to you. Thank you for supporting our program. Donald in Aurora, Illinois. Hey, Donald, what's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Tom. You know, I'm really concerned about what's taking place with the Affordable Care Act. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm always afraid that that they will can this whole thing.
They won't.
Just let it go.
They won't. This thing is, you know, Donald, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, at the most 5 years from now, but I think, frankly, 2-3 years from now, we're going to be looking back at this going, oh, yeah, you know, everybody was running around with their hair on fire for no good reason.
Yeah, because if that were to happen, this will never be brought up by another president again, and we will really lose the ability to go Affordable Care Act. We will never have another.
Well, it could be. On the other hand, you know, people get a taste of it. I mean, if we were to instantly go back to the, you know, to do what the Republicans want and repeal Obamacare, then instantly the health insurance companies would kick off young people off their policies who are on their parents' policies. They would instantly start canceling the policies of people when they get sick. They would instantly start demanding all your medical information so they could determine what pre-existing conditions they aren't going to cover or whether they're not going to cover you or not. I mean, the things, these have been very gradual changes over the last 3 years that have been almost invisible to a lot of people, that the health insurance market has gotten safer and more reasonable. I still think it's wrong that it's a for-profit market, but hey, it's what we've got. And if we were to go back to the Republican to do what the Republicans are demanding, people would be shocked. And I think that once they've gotten a taste, and they've gotten a half a taste of what could be, I don't think you can go back.
Yeah, I don't know. The American people seem to have short memories, and they never seem to learn. And you know, they were screaming about this other, single payer. Like as if, I mean, I would think he would have just as much trouble with single payer trying to get that in place than he would this.
Single payer would be really easy. Here's how you do it, and it could be, you know, a 2-page piece of legislation. The eligibility age for Medicare drops by 10 years every year. Now, you have to do it gradually because you'd have to enlarge the size of Medicare. You know, you'd have to, you know, have people process enrollees and all that kind of thing. So this year, the Medicare eligibility age becomes 55. Next year, it's 45. The year after that, it's 35. The year after that, it's 25. The year after that, it's 15. The year after that, it's 5. The year after that, it's 0. And so every year you drop the eligibility age by 10 years, or if you wanted to do it more gradually by 5 years. And over the course of a decade or so, you transition the entire country off for-profit health insurance, these bankster leeches, and into a single-payer system. It would be very, very simple. I laid this out in my book, Rebooting the American Dream. There's a chapter called Medicare Part E, E for Everybody. And then the other thing we need to do is we need to fix Medicare and all these holes that have been drilled in it by Republicans so that the health insurance companies can fill in the gaps. We need to just close all those gaps and charge for it enough to pay for all of it, because, you know, the health insurance company should not be able to scam us by making a profit on Medicare, too. But that's how I would do it. Donald, thank you for calling. I share your concern, but I think I'm a little more optimistic than you. Tim in Palatine. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. How are you?
Great. What's on your mind?
Yeah. You know, I had seen you on YouTube, and you had commented on what atheism is. And I think there was a misunderstanding, or I don't know if we're using two different definitions. I believe that you had called atheism a religion, and I don't think that's quite right.
No, I always qualify it. I say evangelical atheism is a religion. People who are trying to convert other people to their way of thinking, that's one of the definitions of a religion. So if somebody is evangelical about their atheism is their religion. On the other hand, you know, I knew my dad for 59 years, however old I was when he died, 57 years. I knew him my whole entire life. And I didn't know until about 3 months before he died that he was an atheist. And he told me he'd been an atheist since he was a kid. And, you know, I just never knew. My dad was not practicing a religion. My dad just had an opinion. My dad did not have a religion. There's a difference.
You know, in that term, if you were to use it as evangelical, for instance, if I were to say, oh, that gym that I work out in, that's my church. The me working out, that's my religion. And that is how, if you look
no, at it, because the gym doesn't have to do with existential issues.
Well, there are definitions where it does say.
Although there are some people who are evangelical about their gyms. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and if you look in Webster's, for instance, it'll say an interest, a belief, or an activity that is very important to a person or a group. So I can see that. But I would say that that's being used poetically.
Oh, there's I'd be the first to agree with you.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and as you can understand, there's a lot of misunderstandings.
In some ways, I'm a professional polemicist. I mean, that's what I do for a living. Tim, thank you for the call, and thank you for the opportunity for me to clarify. I appreciate it. Occasionally, I may use shorthand, and I shouldn't. But thanks so much for being with us. And Monday, I think I'm going to be in. I'm not sure where I'm going to be on Monday. Yeah, I'll be in Denver. Okay. Monday we'll be on the air in Denver. We'll be doing our show from AM 750 Denver. I'm very much looking forward to it. And this weekend, if you're in Minneapolis, get over to am950radio.com and pick up your tickets so that we can hang out tomorrow over at the Operating Engineers Hall. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.